We'll go to the second case this morning, Fabian LaFuente versus the United States.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the District Court erred in dismissing Mr. LaFuente's petition without an evidentiary hearing. This Court has noted that a criminal defense lawyer may have a conflict of interest when she is under investigation by the same governmental entity that is prosecuting her client. Mr. LaFuente has alleged that his trial counsel, Ms. Gambino, had just such a conflict of interest. He has alleged that Ms. Gambino was under investigation while she represented Mr. LaFuente and feared that the U.S. Attorney's Office might bring charges against her for harboring an illegal alien in violation of federal law. A district court denied Mr. LaFuente's petition without an evidentiary hearing because it believed that Mr. LaFuente's statements, quote, assume, end quote, that Ms. Gambino was under investigation, but, quote, he supposedly has not provided any evidence of that. Respectfully, the district court's opinion does not apply the appropriate standard and also mischaracterizes Mr. LaFuente's petition. The district court was essentially requiring Mr. LaFuente to prove his allegations before proceeding to an evidentiary hearing. That's not the standard for any petitioner, and it's certainly not the standard for a pro se petitioner like Mr. LaFuente. Section 2255 states that a district court may not dismiss a petition without an evidentiary hearing unless the motion and record conclusively show that the petitioner is entitled to no relief. Mr. LaFuente need not prove his allegations at this stage to be entitled to an evidentiary hearing. Instead, as this court has repeatedly held, a district court must grant an evidentiary hearing when the petitioner alleges facts that, if proven, would entitle him to relief. The district court also ignored the fact that an even more liberal standard applies in this case because Mr. LaFuente is a pro se petitioner who is confined to prison. So this court has held that courts must view pro se motions of prisoners liberally and not require the specificity expected of a lawyer. And this court has held that thus a pro se Section 2255 motion may be inartistically or obliquely drawn, but still may require a hearing by the district court.
I think we're aware of those principles, sir, but what precisely was alleged in the petition that justifies the hearing?
Right. Mr. LaFuente alleged that Ms. Gambino was under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office for violation of federal law, harboring this illegal alien. He alleged that she never informed him of this conflict and he never consented to such a conflict. As part of his petition, he attached an ARDC complaint that was drafted and filed by the ARDC against Ms. Gambino that details her violations of federal law. The ARDC complaint alleges that Ms. Gambino violated 8 U.S.C. 1324 by harboring an illegal alien by the name of Mr. Ramos Gonzalez. It explains how Ms. Gambino knew Mr. Ramos Gonzalez. It explains that she understood that he had once again, for the fifth or sixth time, illegally re-entered the country. It details their communications, how she provided him with money, a motorcycle, food, and other things. It also explains how the police were tipped off to this criminal behavior, and it alleges that once Ms. Gambino saw the police arrive, she gave her car keys to Mr. Ramos Gonzalez so that he could evade the police. In addition, Mr. LaFuente pointed to excerpts from the trial showing that the government was aware of this criminal conduct. On the first day of trial, Ms. Gambino, defense counsel, said, "Your Honor, the government has brought to my attention an issue that has bearing on my representation, Mr. LaFuente." The AUSA said, "Your Honor, from the government's perspective, it has not popped up just now. The significance of it was broad, from my bosses, as it were, from their perspective, and is something that the court needs to address." And Ms. Gambino said, "I was informed of it this morning, Your Honor. I was under the impression it wasn't going to be an issue. We come back from lunch, now it's an issue. I want to resolve this before we continue." In addition, after the district court ruled, Mr. LaFuente attached to his certificate of appealability an affidavit from a Mr. Bennett, who knows both Ms. Gambino and Mr. Ramos Gonzalez. He attests in his affidavit that they both separately informed him that Ms. Gambino was under investigation for assisting Mr. Ramos Gonzalez and thought that she might be prosecuted or indicted by
Going back to the colloquy before the district court, I gather the major problem is we don't know what the district court knew. Is that correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, because what happened after that discussion, they went back to chambers. Nothing was put on the record. There was no court reporter. And once they came back from chambers, they just immediately went into opening arguments.
So I gather your view is if the district court knew of the of an investigation by the United States Attorney's Office of the defense counsel, that the the district court had an obligation to do something at that point?
We think if the even if the court just knew about the ARDC problems, the court should have asked what were the issues with the ARDC. Upon learning that the only problem with the ARDC was a violation of federal law, the court should have asked, was there an investigation? Is she going to be prosecuted? The court should have looked into what the issues were. If there was a conflict, the court should have addressed Mr. Lafuente, made sure he understood what the issues were, and made sure he wanted to continue with Ms. Gambino as his counsel. None of that happened here, and we think that violated Mr. Lafuente's rights. At the very least, we think this needs to go to an evidentiary hearing so more of these facts can be developed. We think it was an error for the district court to dismiss on the pleadings as a matter of law.
And precisely what information do you see coming out at that evidentiary hearing? I mean, what are you going to be able to present to the judge?
At that point, we will have Mr. Bennett's affidavit. It'll be before the district court. It wasn't before the district court before. There may be an affidavit from the government. All the government has said in their footnote is they're not aware of any evidence that Ms. Gambino was under investigation during trial. But if Ms. Gambino was under investigation prior to trial, that would still be a conflict of interest. That's the U.S. versus Levy case. In that case, the defense counsel's investigation ended prior to trial. But the Second Circuit recognized that's still a conflict of interest because what happens prior to trial affects what happens during trial. And a criminal defendant is entitled to effective representation and conflict-free representation at all stages of the proceedings against him. Mr. Lafuente was entitled to that effective representation.
The idea being, in your case, that she may want to please the prosecuting officials of the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Correct. I think Tompkins in this circuit and other cases we cite established the point that when defense counsel is under investigation, they may tend to pull their punches. They want to keep a cooperative relationship with the government for their own personal interest. But that's not in the defendant's interest. It's in his interest to press the case, to make really things difficult for the government.
We don't know. And when you say the U.S. Attorney's Office was investigating, it may be not them, but an independent agency, maybe an Immigration Naturalization Service investigator, somebody like that. I mean, we don't know.
That's true, Your Honor. That's not clear from the record. And maybe an evidentiary hearing would clear that up, but the district court can't make that determination on the pleadings.
But we do know that it was the government that interjected this into the case by, at some point, communicating this to defense counsel.
Correct. The very first time it came up was from Ms. Gambino, the defense counsel, and she said, "Your Honor, the government has brought to my attention an issue that has bearing on my representation."
And that's not disputed by the government?
No. Unless there are any additional questions, I'll reserve my more time.
Thank you, counsel. Please.
May it please the Court, my name is John Ness, and I represent the United States. Your Honors, the District Court did not abuse its discretion when it refused to hold an evidentiary hearing based on the petitioner's speculative and unsupported affidavit. As this Court has explained on many occasions, an evidentiary hearing is not required for every 2255 motion. Rather, a hearing is required only when the petitioner includes a detailed and specific affidavit showing that he has actual proof of his allegations.
Well, as a realistic and practical matter, what more could the petitioner have said in his petition that he did not say?
Your Honor, the petitioner could have included foundational facts, such as I secured or attempted to secure an affidavit from my trial counsel. I learned from person X about this investigation. I was in place Y when I learned about this investigation, and it was date Z when I learned about the investigation. None of those facts are included in the petitioner's documents.
As I read through this case, studied the record, what have you, during the past week, the 500-pound gorilla in the room to me was that the government could, if there's nothing here, government could have ended this real fast with an affidavit. The government really has stood silent. I mean, during the colloquy in chambers, at the trial sidebar, when the 2255 was filed, the government could have simply said she wasn't under investigation. But the government hasn't said that.
That is true.
That's what he wants to know. And when I read your brief, you seem to be saying, gee, that you ought to be more specific about these foundational facts. And, you know, you're sitting there with the key to the whole thing.
I understand Your Honor's question, and if I could make a couple of points
sure.
in response to that. First of all, the government does represent that the burden is on the petitioner in a 2255 case to allege specific and detailed facts. So there is that pleading standard out there, and the government does think that we are entitled to rely on that and to hold the petitioner to his pleading burden. With respect to filing an affidavit, yes, the government could have done that, Your Honor. There are reasons not to file an affidavit, including the fact that the government generally doesn't disclose the fact of a pending investigation. It could have been done in this case. It may have been the better course, Your Honor. It was not done, and the record is clear on that, but there were reasons not to do that. And our point in our briefing is that when we bring it back to the pleading standard that this court has established for 2255 motions, it was the petitioner's burden to show that he had specific facts, specific evidence that his lawyer was under investigation by this office, the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois. He didn't do that. So, yes, it could have been done, but there were reasons not to do it. Again, Your Honors, the pleading standard in this case is that, as I mentioned, the petitioner has to show detailed and specific facts showing that he has actual proof of his allegations. He didn't do that here. As I mentioned, there were no foundational facts in his affidavit showing that he had proof that the government was investigating his trial counsel. The circumstantial case, if you will, of a pending investigation, I think it's important to walk through the timeline on this.
Do I recall that the government was the one to call the attention of the lawyer to the fact that there was a problem?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, then why didn't you go ahead and tell the judge what the problem was?
That may well have happened, Your Honor. The record doesn't reflect that. I don't know why that wasn't done at that point. But I do think that point speaks to something important, which is that if the government had something to hide, if the government was out there investigating someone, if there was an active investigation, that would have been a good time to tell the judge.
Right.
And the government raised it. So that does create an inference for this court, we think, that there was nothing there to hide. There was nothing. The government raised an ARDC point.
I'm not suggesting there's anything to hide. It's just there's nothing there at all. I mean, it's like looking for a black cat in a dark room. There may be a cat there, but I don't know how I can find it where it is.
Well, and I think, Your Honor, that's a reasonable inference to draw from it is that there was nothing there. The government raised this ARDC issue.
If there was nothing there, why did you raise it?
The government raised the ARDC issue because that was there, and that's an important distinction to remember here. There was a pending ARDC investigation. The government raised that because...
But not the government's investigation, just the ARDC?
Correct, because as the government represented to the district court, there was no pending investigation.
So that's an absolute no.
Correct, Your Honor.
And as my brother said, why not file an affidavit saying there was none? It didn't happen.
Again, Your Honor, the reason that the government didn't file an affidavit, there are reasons. There's no reason in the record. I don't want to overrepresent what's in the record. I just stress to the court that there are reasons that the government ordinarily would be reticent about disclosing the existence of a pending criminal investigation.
Oh, yeah. I was there once myself.
But you did cabinet. It says that she was not being investigated during the trial.
That's what the government's representation was to the district court, Your Honor. And the government stands on that representation here. The record doesn't reflect anything more than that representation. Again, I would point out that if we look at the timeline here as well, it's a reasonable inference that there was no investigation that this court can draw, because the facts, as are shown in the government's supplemental appendix of the ARDC complaint against the petitioner's lawyer, those facts were in September of 2000. The petitioner's lawyer was not retained until September of 2002, 2 years later. The trial happened a year after that, in September of 2003. And in, I believe, February of 2004, the petitioner was suspended by the ARDC. There's no record evidence anywhere that there was ever an indictment against the petitioner's lawyer, anything. So that's 3 years from the time of the facts that gave rise to the ARDC investigation is when petitioner's trial started. That's an awfully long time for there to be a pending investigation. And again, when we go back to the petitioner's affidavit, it's very similar to the situation that was in the case of Ailman versus the United States, in which Harry Ailman had alleged that two of the witnesses against him in his organized crime trial were actually government informants. This court rejected that and affirmed the denial of that motion without an evidentiary hearing, because, as the court explained, there were no facts showing how he learned of that information, where he came about it. That's the same exact situation we have here. There were no facts at all in the defendant's affidavit or in his pleadings showing that how he came across these supposed facts. He just said there was an investigation, and his point now is that you're supposed to take that and require an evidentiary hearing. Your Honors, I would conclude by saying that is not the standard of pleading that this court has established in cases like Pruitt, in cases like Coffo versus the United States. There's a requirement of a detailed and specific affidavit showing actual facts, actual proof, and there's a reason for that. And I don't want to make any more of this point than to just say that evidentiary hearings are not cost-free. There is a cost to the district court of holding an evidentiary hearing. Again, I don't want to belabor that point. If there are meritorious claims, they need to be heard. But this, Your Honors, was not a meritorious claim. On that, the government will rest on its brief, unless there are any further questions from the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time?
Just very briefly, Your Honors. I think the key point is the government has never come forward with an affidavit saying that there was never an investigation of Ms. Gambino. The most the government has said in that footnote is there was not a pending investigation during trial. But as the Levy case shows, if there was an investigation prior to trial, that's still a conflict of interest. The government has never addressed that point. The government's explanation that it was merely bringing the ARDC issue to the court's attention is not really consistent with the transcript we have. If that's all the government was doing, Ms. Gambino wouldn't have said the government has brought to my attention an issue that has a bearing on my representation. The government wouldn't have said, from our perspective, it has not popped up just now. The significance of it is broad. Unless there are any further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to